Well, hello, and welcome back to another scary episode of Ghost Stories Told from the South. I am your host, Stephen LeBooth, and I got some scary, scary stuff for you today. Full of thrills and chills. All righty, ma'am. I'll quit being a dork. Well, how the heck is everybody? Hope you're doing good. Hope you're doing great. Hope you're ready to be scared. And we're back. I don't know where that came from. But anyways, guys, I hope you're having a great day. Sorry I'm a little late this morning getting this together. I didn't record it last night. This spring, Texas has been getting a lot of rain, thank goodness, and a lot of tornadoes and bad storms. We had some rolling last night. That's why I didn't record, and I'm doing it this morning. Got up with the kids this morning. It's been raining all day. Excuse me. Got on the back porch, used the old Blackstone, and made some breakfast. So that's why I'm a little late today. But I'm here. But I hope you guys have been doing great. Just want to say thank you guys for the channel growing like it is. My podcast is growing. I want to say thank you. Thank you very much. And go check out the YouTube channel, guys. And just like I said, I want to give thanks to everybody around the world who listens. Like I said, of course here in America, but Canada listens a lot. England. I believe Scotland, Ireland, Germany does. Hesse, Germany really loves the show. Trying to think of the other ones, but just want to say thank you to everybody who listens. Keep up the good work. And wherever you're at, I hope you're doing great. And, yeah, man, I hope you're doing good and you ain't falling on hard times. And I hope listening to me kind of breaks away from reality for you. But we got some good stuff today. So, you know the routine, man. Go find you a nice warm blankie. Go cuddle up by the fire. Get you some hot coffee or some hot tea or whatever you prefer to drink. And get ready to be scared, guys. So, here we go with our first story. All right, our first story is Dawson's Creek, New Mexico. The Dawson Cemetery in New Mexico is all that remains of the city of Dawson. Once a mining town, Dawson has since become a ghost town. And there are a lot of ghost towns like this around America that started up like a mining town like this one. And then, of course, when whatever they was mining, either they mined it or whatever they was mining just wasn't that big a seller anymore or something everybody needed, the mine shut down. So, therefore, when the mine shut down, the town shut down. So, there's a lot of towns all around like this that blew up and then just lasted for maybe 10 years, maybe 20, and then went to shit. But anyways, explosions in the mines resulted in the deaths of hundreds of miners, many of which are buried in Dawson Cemetery. Established in 1913, the Dawson Cemetery also includes the graves of World War II veterans and local residents of Dawson. Since the town of Dawson shut down, the cemetery is the only remaining landmark. It has been since listed as a part of the National Register of Historical Places. Due to the lack of upkeep, and most of the plots in the cemetery are overgrown with grass, the miners killed in the explosion are all marked with white paint, iron crosses within a fenced-in area of the cemetery. The Dawson Creek Cemetery remains a popular attraction for ghost hunters and has since gone on to inspire the Netflix show Godless. It is now known as one of the most haunted locations in New Mexico due to the sheer number of miners buried here, reaching almost 400 in total. Many people believe the miners who died in the explosion are not at peace. Visitors have reported seeing lights floating down nearby hills and around the cemetery, which are believed to be the headlamps of the miners' helmets. Some visitors have seen ghostly figures of miners walking around the cemetery, with which disappear into thin air when approached. Others have heard low voices and moans after the dark. The lights and apparitions appear to wander aimlessly throughout the graveyard. Many witnesses believe these spirits are restless and may be lost, but not harmful, as no physical interactions have been recorded. Ghost hunters have attempted to investigate the cemetery using special ghost hunting tools, and they have been captured, but not, or to try to capture something, but nothing has been documented yet. So if you're around there, go check out this old ghost town, Dawson, and go check out the cemetery, Dawson's Cemetery. All right. Let's get on with our next one. All right, our next story is the Lafayette Guest House in New Orleans, Louisiana. Okay. The haunted guest house in Lafayette. Without doubt, Bourbon Street in New Orleans is the most visited street. The Vegas Strip has got nothing on its French Quarter with its 24/7 partying. Mardi Gras beads are thrown from the second floor balconies to suspecting tourists, meandering the crowded street below. The neon green, long as my forearm, hand grenade bottle is a sight most frequently seen, and is in the sounds of jazz and blues and Cajun and Zydeco. You can be heard in laughter and conversation up and down the streets. But let's look at the history of the guest house, of the Lafayette Guest House. Although the current building at 1003 Bourbon Street has existed since its construction in 1849, the lot on which the banquet hall sits is much older than the mid-19th century. In fact, during the late 18th century, the property of the Lafayette Guest House was welcoming people to stay even then. Although perhaps not in the same what we would imagine the Lafayette Guest House innkeeper and owner would today. Okay. 1003 Bourbon Street and the surrounding plots of land was not always the site of New Orleans Charity Hospital. It was a charity hospital instead. This is just one of the few locations that the hospital found itself during the 18th and 19th century. Upon arriving in New Orleans in 1788, fresh-faced colonists from France and other European countries quickly realized that New Orleans was tragically a pit of disease. The first hospital within the Crescent City was Royal Hospital on Ursulus Avenue, not so far off from the old Utilities Convent. Excuse me. The oldest building was the Mississippi River. Jean Louis, a French sailor, had... The French sailor had made a lot of money in the well for the construction of the hospital at the time of his death in 1730. And it was equipped and intended to deal with only one spirit of contention, venereal diseases. If you don't know what venereal diseases are, I don't know how to word this, because sometimes there are kids that listen to it. I know I cuss and stuff. I believe it's venereal diseases, like STDs and stuff, sexual diseases. You know, well, because back then they weren't very clean people. They didn't have access to plumbing like we do now. So back then people showered. They didn't get to shower or bathe every day unless you was, like, wealthy. You know, so. Anyways. The Royal Hospital was an intentionally called Hospital of St. John's. Or Hospital Diaz Popores de la Charite. Anyways, I fucked that up. I hate it when they do this. They put this shit in abbreviation. All right, I'm back to my spot. Sorry about that. And this is the second oldest hospital in the United States. By 1736, the first official charity hospital was officially built at Charles and Benneville Street. Later, it functioned under the jurisdiction of church and government during the Spanish colonization period. Excuse me. Much to the discouragement of the general public, under the control of the Spanish consul, of the Spanish consul laws, were passed to indicate for the poor people. For example, if a patient died after 3 days of illness without having had a consultation, the doctor in commit was deemed guilty and fined $40 for the House of Charity. One has to wonder how problematic a doctor's negligence was towards his patients during this time that a law was installed to conjugate such bad habits. Unfortunately, a storm in 1778 weakened the hospital's structure, and a hurricane in 1979 brought the hospital to a heap of ruins. It would not be until 3 years later, in 1781, the consul decided to build a new hospital, the San Carlos. Until then, the poor and sick literally had nowhere to go and sometimes led in heaps on the streets. The San Carlos Hospital was constructed on a portion of the property where the Lafayette Guest House is today. And according to the newspaper reports and in memoirs, it was apparently that stuff of legends. Real estate entrepreneur Don Allmaster invested all kinds of money into the property, and he agreed to donate 5 slaves to the institution as well. Reportedly, one of the men named Domingo was instructed to art of surgery and was the lead doctor, who was even given the lead authority in the surgery ward. But much like the other hospitals in New Orleans, which had faced unfortunately endings, St. Carlos was no different. In 1809, it burned down, and it was left to some of the property was sold off to other bidders. The hands of the pirate Paris Lafayette. Okay, I don't know where this is going. All right, basically this is, you know, telling the story. Okay, here we go. Okay, the pirate, okay. Arthur William C. Davis of the Pirate Lafayette once wrote that where today stands the Lafayette Guest House at 1003 Bourbon Street, Lafayette residence is confirmed by Mary Ballard's August 16th of 1816 purchased. The association of the Lafayettes with her in the property, even if one does not assume that Perry bought it for her in the package arrangement, is confirmed 3 years later after she sold and then repurchased it in 1819. In part with a promissory note granted by Jean Lafayette. Within New Orleans, the 18th and 19th centuries, the system of placing was instituted within the security hierarchy. Women mixed of race were deemed quadrants. If they were 1/4 African American, occasionally, if they were, 1/4, okay, African American, as they were constructed, that they the most beautiful and exotic. The French coral men described them as mistresses. Thought they never went them or wanted them. Okay, I'm going to bypass this because it just goes into a lot of I like hearing the history, but it goes into another 3 pages of stuff. We'll go into the current building now and what it is, and then we're just going to skip right. Okay, here we go. Okay, now we're going to start talking about the ghost of the Lafayette House. No one building in New Orleans seems to be complete without a ghost or two haunting the corridors. And here we go with more fucking shit in parentheses. And then my pages don't want to cooperate. Okay, let's get this going. The ghost of the Lafayette Guest House. The old building in New Orleans seems complete without a ghost or two in its corridors. New Orleans on our ghost tours in the Lafayette Guest House and gallery is no different. For years, guests of the hotel have reported all sorts of overwhelming and paranormal experiences. Through some of these experiences seem to be reoccurring. Not only at the Lafayette Guest House welcomes guests of the living, it seems that they also have a few more permanent, more ghostly residents. The Haunted Room of 21. According to Mark, the hotel's marketing guru, Room 21 of the hotel is probably the most haunted room at the Lafayette Guest House. And it's definitely the most requested room within the hotel. But who accidentally is haunting this room? Who is actually haunting this room? Her name, allegedly, is Mary. As the story goes, Mary is one of the Gillespie young daughters, only about 8 to 10 years old, when she fell to illness. Some might say the yellow fever is what killed her, because at the time that was one of the biggest killers in New Orleans. Within 2 months in the summer of 1853, for example, some 10,000 people died within the Crescent City, whether Mary was one of the victims of yellow fever during the year, we will never know, but quite certain. But we do know that Mary never left 1003 Bourbon Street once she had submitted to death, or submitted to the disease. Apparently, Mary's spirit has never left either. Her apparition has appeared in the mirror found right outside of the room of room 21. Her ghostly form has reportedly manifested and talked with the children who are guests of the hotel. And even Mark confirmed these reportedly ghost sightings for us during our visit to the guest house. Her spirit is said to still be in the room and around the hotel. Guests have reported hearing crying and coughing. There has also been reflections in the mirror. Room 21 is certainly the hot spot of the Lafayette Guest House. Other visitors of the hotel have experienced that its particular room exudes such a feeling of sorrow and disease. Excuse me. But it is the ghost of Mary causing such a depression in the environment. In the environment, or another entity. According to the story, Mary's own mother was so distraught upon discovering that her daughter had passed away that she simply never recovered. She allegedly died in room 21, just like Mary did years earlier. Although it's difficult to say who is right or wrong, it is difficult to say who is doing all of the paranormal activity in room 21. It remains the Lafayette Guest House most frequently asked room when guests are booking there to stay. If you have hope to enjoy your vacation with the ghost, Mary will make sure to book your stay long in advance, because of room 21 is brimming with activity, both corporals and otherworldly. Here are some of the other ghosts and stuff that happens there. It is safe to say that though room 21 remains the most active, the rest of the house is no less quiet. Lights have been known to turn off and on all over the hotel. Items, too, are moved around the house without rhyme or reason. One day a guest hairbrush could not be found in their room. Although they swear they put it on the bathroom counter,
it's parentheses bullshit, and I don't know why they freaking do that. I just need to go ahead and before I read these and cut that out. Okay, she put the brush, She was in the bathroom and put it on the bathroom counter. The next, a guest has returned to the room to discover that the furniture has been completely rearranged. During our visit, Mark was quiet to point out that the most common thing people say are that they hear things being arranged across the floor upstairs in an empty room. Perhaps it is the ghostly spirit in the minus the furniture rearranging. Perhaps it's something more mysterious. The Lafayette Guest House is not just a home away from home during a vacation. It is also an operating art gallery. Many of the guests who choose to stay at the banquet hotel are artists themselves or are art enthusiasts. Currently, no display is the artwork of internationally renowned Vladimir Kush. Originally hailing from Moscow, Russia, Kush has studied art since the early age of 7. And even after he was drafted into the military at the age of 17, Kush did not let this deter or soil him away from his dreams. He attended the Institute of Fine Arts after an honorable discharge from the military. Hosted art shows all over around Europe and currently lives in Hawaii. I don't know why they got to talk about that guy. But anyways, if you want to go to the Lafayette Guest House and get you a room, go do it. Let me report on this. Or y'all report on it and tell me about it. All right, let's get on with our next story. All right, our next story is the Logan Mansion. Okay, history. I'm not going to go through too much of the history because there's a lot of it. But we're going to go through... I will tell just a little bit of it about the mansion and all that, and then we'll go to the the stories. All right, the Logan Mansion is not a huge structure, but the decor and design makes it an historic gem. It seems bigger than it is in reality, and has a lot to offer. It is only 4,965 square feet. Plenty of room for two people or for entertainment of friends and business affairs. There's no wasted space. And... okay, 1807... okay, well, I take it this place was... okay. I take it this place was built. Okay. Well, it's a mansion was built in 1897, of course, by Lafayette Logan. All right. Let's get into the ghost stories of the mansion. It is well known that the child spirit of who resides here was 11-year-old Theodore Hunt. But three theories exist as to why her spirit is here. Children who die in a structure where they felt love and had positive experiences often like to stay there as spirits. If they die somewhere else, their spirit may also seek
out their favorite spot in its world. Here's one story. Town legend tells the sad tale of a child. Okay. This little, okay. Just kind of reading ahead, making sure real quick. I ain't got them in parentheses crap. All right, I think we're good. Okay. Here we go. Okay. The town legend tells that the sad tale of a child named Theodora, who was the daughter of Dr. Hunt and Dr. Hunt. Dr. Hunt may have been a widower and was probably busy with his practice. Dr. Hunt and Theodora were neighbors of Lafayette and Lavina. Her home life may have been lonely, so she may have spent most of her free hours finding love and attention from the Logans, which probably made them feel better about being childless. Needless to say, she was welcomed. I'm sure that Dr. Hunt was grateful that the Logans could have shined some happiness onto Theodora's life. She may have been facing depression so bad that she could not stand it anymore and decided to take her life at a place where people were loving. She jumped out of the attic window and died, so the town legend goes. Story 2. Her death certificate verifies her cause of death as being a heart attack on June 20th of 1904. If she had a serious medical condition, she may have been able to sign up for school, depriving her of social interaction. Perhaps that is why she fell from the attic window, or more likely, she could have had a heart attack in the Logan's huge attic, or may have even died at home. The Logan's home was built in 1897, which works with its story. Here's the third story. The family of Theodora say that the first story listed above is not true. Ignoring her death certification, they reported that she did not kill herself, but lived to grow up, to adulthood. If this claim is true, then she still could be this child. People who had wonderful childhood at a place where they had love and support, but found being an adult a bit tougher, may decide after they leave this world to return to be happy times of their childhood, and appear as if the child self in their place that they found a lot of love and a lot of fun and love. They reveal their memories during activities they enjoyed, appearing as they were doing this favorite time in their life. Now we're going to talk about the ghost of this place. The first ghost is the spirit of Theodora Hunt. She is described by Bill and Vicky LeBron, LeBron, as being sweet but mischievous, doing little things to get attention. Vicky reported that they do not mind her, which was probably the same kind of attitude that Lafayette and Lafayette and Levina Logan had towards her while she was living. She adores playing in the attic. Disemboweled child giggles can be heard by the living. She can open and close doors, even a locked screen door. She has been known to look, or she has been known to lock Vicky out. Vicky scolds her and the spirit calms down, but not for long. She moves items and probably puts them in odd places so the living will know she is there. When workmen were doing some restoration work and a painting job, it was Theodora who took tools in the paint can lids. She probably plays in the bathrooms as she did while alive, probably exploring items there. A music box in one of the rooms began playing by itself. Some may like to look in jewelry boxes and makeup bags. She must be fixated with electricity, as most spirits are. Probably plays with the lights and anything else electrical. Perhaps she plays with the toilet paper rolls in the bathrooms. Perhaps the living hear her disembodied voices as she plays. Perhaps she likes to sing. Perhaps she likes to watch the social events take place in the mansion. The spirit of Theodora also may have another spirit or two keeping her company. That is the hunch of Vicky LeBron, former owner, personally. Okay. Personally evidence struggled an adult spirit or two. One adult female spirit is attracted to items that an 11-year-old would not be interested in. Silverware is an example by an unseen spirit and recognized. A loud, friendly, disembodied voice, and it wasn't a child's. When Vicky LeBron was lending a house tour, a loud, disembodied, probably male voice behind them gave a warm, friendly southern welcome. Okay. Yes, indeed, the spirit of Theodora has a blast entertaining herself, gets the attention she still desires, and may be as lonely as she was when she was alive. Perhaps the two other spirits, a male and a female, visit to keep her company. My theory is that the spirits of Lafayette and Levina Logan are there with Theodora. So, if you're ever around these parts, go check out the Logan Mansion in Louisiana. It should be a fun time. All right. This is our last one. All right, our last story. Our last story is the Shreveport Municipal Auditorium. Auditorium. The Shreveport Municipal Auditorium is located in Shreveport, Louisiana. Stands as an iconic structure with a storied past and a reputation for being one of the most haunted buildings in the region. You guys know, how many times have I covered a ghost story on here and they say it's always the haunted, most haunted? Yeah, I hear it all the time. Okay, but anyways, storied with a reputation of being okay. As its history dates back to the early early 20th century, this historical landmark was witness to countless events, both joyous and tragic, giving rise to numerous chilling ghost stories and paranormal encounters. In this blog post, we'll explore the history of the Shreveport Municipal Auditorium, the eerie sightings reported over the years, and the haunting tales that continue to send shivers down the spines of those who dare to visit. Okay. A glimpse into the past. The auditorium was constructed in 1929 and has since played a significant role in the culture and environment, the environment life of the city. The magnificent building boasts an impressive architectural style that blends of Art Deco and neoclassic influences. With its grand entrance, ornated detailing, and iconic structures, the auditorium exudes a unique charm that has drawn both performers and audiences alike for decades. Okay. The Era Arosa. Visitors to the auditorium often report of unexplained feeling of being watched, especially exploring its darkened corners and excluded spaces. Some witnesses have described sudden temperature drops and an unsettling atmosphere that surrounds the building, furthering adding to its mysterious stuff. Paranormal encounters. Over the years, the auditorium has gained a reputation for its paranormal activity. Continuous testimonies from employees, performers, and visitors speak of strange occurrences, unexplained sounds, and shadow figures lurking in the backstage areas. Ghost hunting groups have frequented this site, capturing electric voice phenomenon, and readings and providing eerie evidence of its haunted nature. The Ghostly Legends. Oh, another lady in white. That don't surprise me. The Lady in White, one of the most well-known apparitions, is the Lady in White, a special figure believed to be the ghost of a young actress who tragically died during a performance in the 1940s. She is often seen drifting through the auditorium's hallways are sitting in an empty seat, her presence felt during quiet nights. The Crying Child. Another haunting tale involves the ghost of a young child heard crying or laughing in the corridors when no one else is around. Some believe that these spirits may be connected to an incident from the building's past. The Phantom Pianist. There have been several accounts of a phantom pianist playing soft melodies on the grand piano in the main hall. No visible sources for the music is ever found. Historical tragedies. Behind the ghost stories lie historical tragedies that have left a lingering imprint on the auditorium. From accidental deaths to unexplained accidents during the performances, These events have become part of the building's dark legacy. The auditorium stands as a testimony to the passage of time, preserving the echoes of its vibrant history alongside the haunting specters that seem to dwell within its walls. Whether one is a skeptic or a believer, the chilling ghost stories and paranormal encounters have been an inseparable part of the auditorium's allure. As the years go by, new tales of eerie encounters will emerge, prompting the legend of the haunted venue for generations to come. I would love to go visit that place too, because it sounds pretty groovy too. All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you liked it. I hope I wasn't too much of a bumbling idiot when I was talking. So, yeah. But I want to thank you guys once again for listening. Thank you for stopping by. We will see you next time. Excuse me. And hey, man, y'all help me keep getting my numbers growing. And go to my YouTube channel and check me out there. I got to catch it up. But you guys do that for me. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. Be good. Be safe. And I hope you're doing good wherever you are. And keep telling scary stories. Until next time, this has been Stephen LaBooth for Ghost Stories Told from the South. We will see you later. Bye.